kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, and we are starting things off a little differently this week. Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm kind of missing Purnell.
What?
he'll be here later. Don't worry, listeners. Purnell's still around.
Thanks.
How was your weekend?
I worked.
So I'll take that as good.
It was great. Yeah. Fantastic.
I'm trying to make small talk, Jacob. Come on, play along.
It sucked. I do tech support for a, you know, multinational clothing and housewares company, whose clothes I cannot fit in. And it was like for one of their brands, it was a special weekend, and naturally everything went shitty. And also another one of the brands, it was just, a discount was ringing up that wasn't supposed to for every single item ever. So,
oh God.
Yep. So they, and of course, like the people who would be able to fix that, they're not in till Monday. And so pretty much it was just like, well, you have to deal with it all weekend. Have fun.
Oh, Jesus.
So they had to take off the discount off of every single item manually as it got rung up. So it'd be like, item, remove promo, item, remove promo, item, remove promo. And you're just hoping that somebody like isn't buying like 30 of something.
Does the customer get to see that there's a promo that's being removed?
They shouldn't, because I know our registers aren't set up. Like, because you know how some stores, like, they'll have the other side that faces you and stuff like that? So, like, you could see, like, look at all the deals you're getting.
Yeah.
No, because this company, it's assumed that you have money and you don't really care about said money.
Mm.
So, yeah.
So it's not Babies R Us.
Seeing as they're out of business, no.
See, I'm narrowing it down. I'm good at this.
You're very good. Folks, it actually turns out I've been addicted to methamphetamine for years, and I just hang out at an abandoned Babies R Us and just pretend that I'm ringing up people.
You're using, you know, like a toy cash register.
This is what this is how I spend my weekends.
Better than on the corner.
You'd think.
Oh, shit. So anything else fun that you've been up to lately, or are you just ready to start some reviews?
I don't know. I mean, I started watching a movie called Loving Vincent, which is about Vincent Van Gogh, and they filmed all the actors and then hand-painted over, like, every single frame.
Oh, so that sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty, like, trippy and interesting movie. Like, pretty much anytime when they're talking about, like, Vincent's life and stuff like that, it's, like, these bright, you know, I don't want to call it abstract, because it really wasn't impressionist, you know, scenes. And then it's just like when they're going to, like, 1 year after he was dead, it goes into this drab gray. Everything's very straight and concise, and like the world, you know, no longer has the beauty that, you know, that it once did. It's a very interesting film. I'm only like 30 minutes in, so I'm really curious as to like how it, you know, goes. Well, I mean, he's already dead at the start of the movie, so we already know that he's dead, or going to, you know.
Spoilers, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, you really only had 120, like, what, 125 years to know about it, so, you know.
I'm still on season three.
So what have you been up to, Joe? Or are you saving that for Purnell?
Well, considering I already recorded a little bit with Purnell, because
you fucking hussy.
I don't know how to record my goddamn show in order. I had a pretty good weekend. It was relaxing. I played some games. I got to relax a bit. I watched people punch each other in the face because UFC was on.
Okay.
So it was fun. It was a good relaxing weekend.
That's good. Glad to hear that you had a good weekend.
Yeah, not many people ask me how I'm doing, so thank you for caring about me and my life, or at least faking it enough.
I didn't say I cared about your life. I'm making small talk.
That's why I said faking it.
Yeah, I didn't really fake it either. No, I'm not, you know, I mean, there's really only like two things I fake, you know, my confidence and my orgasms.
Took you long enough to get that joke out. You ready to do some reviewing, Jacob?
Nah, actually, I'm just going to hang up now.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, have fun.
First game to talk about tonight is called One Piece World Seeker, developed by Genbarian, published by Bandai Namco, released March 15th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Leave your compass behind and join Luffy as he embarks on a brand new action-packed adventure where you can experience the powers of the legendary Gum Gum Fruit to uncover hidden secrets on an original, never-before-seen island. Jacob, tell us about One Piece World Seeker.
So, pretty much, if you ever wanted to play what I would call it pretty much like Assassin's Creed minus all of the, you know, assassinations, and everybody has wacky anime faces on it, and it's also very brightly colored and detailed, then this game is for you.
I'm sold.
Yeah, no, like, seriously, I was just like, haha, I've got this anime game that, you know, will be the envy of all my friends from college who are in anime club and stuff like that, even though I've literally never seen a single episode of One Piece. The only thing I've really ever seen was like some imported Nintendo Wii game that my old roommate used to play. So like I've had like no exposure to this series pretty much whatsoever. So I went in there going blind, and the game really doesn't try to help you. So you should probably like brush up on the Wikipedia article at least first before starting the game. But yeah, I mean, you play, what's his name, Luffy?
Luffy. At least that's how they say it in the game.
Luffy!
True. Although most... yeah, the voice acting is kind of weird for this game, too. I was a little surprised by that. But anyway, so you get separated from your crew, you land on this island, and you have to reunite your crew, get on your boat, and, you know, complete all these tasks for everybody, all the while dodging like these pirates and the Navy and like all these other like infamous bad guys. So I mean, there's a lot of like questing and I don't know if I'd call it really grinding. I mean, I guess you could. It never felt like grinding though. But there's a lot of like random quests that you have to do for people as you like move through the chapters. And eventually like you start running into different gangs on the island, and would kind of reminded me of like Mercenaries, World in Flame. Wait, was World in Flames the first one?
I don't remember the order of the Mercenaries games.
There was only two. Jesus, Joe.
Again,
Playground of Destruction was the first. There we go. Okay. You know, like how you could go through that game and like, oh, well, I just like killed off these guys. I just pissed off the Chinese, or I better like go kill some Russians and make the Chinese happy, that kind of stuff. So you have to balance everybody's, you know, liking of you with this thing called karma. It operates the same way. You just have to complete missions, and then they're like, oh, we like you, but oh, you might have pissed off the other group. So then you have to do something that makes them happy. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the gameplay. The graphics on this thing, holy shit, are they gorgeous.
Yeah, this is a slick looking game, and you're just playing on a regular Xbox One. On the X in HDR, this game is jaw dropping.
It's jaw dropping on regular Xbox One. Like, it is insanely beautiful. Imagine, like, Assassin's Creed if they didn't make everything look dreary and weird, like, and, you know, and cloudy and stuff like that.
Well, the recent Assassin's Creed games have had a lot more daylight in them.
I haven't. They've had daylight in them. Yay. New Assassin's Creed, you know, daylight DLC, only $10.
Oh my god, I think my microphone just picked up whatever the asshole next door is doing.
Well, that's not polite to say that about your wife. That
loud roar. No, it was like an engine revving.
So your wife farted? She'll never invite me over again.
Never. Anyway, the game, really good looking game.
Oh my god, it's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, it's just like the, like, especially once you get into, like, it already looks impressive when you're first starting, but then you get into Steel City and it's just like you just wander the streets. And granted, I was a little surprised that, like, the streets are kind of empty. But I just spent more time just, like, looking at, like, the architecture of everything and just, like, the different signs that they have up. And it's just like they really took their time, you know, like, laying out a city and making it seem like this big metropolis. Now, granted, it's not full, so, I mean, I don't know if maybe they were having, like, issues with that, and, like, they just, you know, removed crowds, or maybe they found it to be too distracting or something like that. But, yeah, it's just, like, it's just gorgeous to just walk around the land of this game. I was really surprised by that. I'm used to a lot of anime games looking, you know, like, they'll throw everything into, like, the voice acting or perhaps the story, and just, like, graphics are just secondary. But this thing, it's probably, like, one of the best-looking games I've ever played on the Xbox.
Yeah, and it's one of those games where it's fun to just walk around and explore. I've put a few hours into this one myself, and I get lost in the scenery. I'll be on my way walking to one city or another city, and instead of going there, I'm just walking off to the side, exploring what's over here, checking out the resources that are littered all around the map, looking for treasure chests. It's just always finding ways to distract me with shiny object syndrome.
Yeah. I really only have three complaints about the game. Like, one of them's kind of minor. It was just like, I'm a little surprised that your guy can't swim. He's a pirate.
Yeah.
You know, and he can't swim in water. Like, you fall in any water that's deeper than, like, 5 feet and you drown. So I was just like, what? Come on, guys. I mean, like, you could at least, like, let him, like, doggy paddle, like, around the island or something like that. But, yeah, it's just like, as soon as you fall, like, it's like old GTA. Like, you fall in the water, oh, that's it.
Well, at least you don't die. They just reset you back to where you were.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, it's still kind of annoying. But the other two things there is that, like, the voice acting, like, aside from cutscenes, it's pretty much not there. It's a lot of people like, like, they're just making all these, like, weird grunting noises as, like, they're delivering in-game dialogue, which I'll be honest, I was a tad disappointed with. Because, I mean, even though this is, like, a Japanese game, they don't bother translating it, which I know all One Piece fans, from what I understand, are going to be thankful, because they all hate the English dub anyway. But it's just, I don't know, it always kind of took me out of the conversations, you know, like, when listening to it. You didn't have this issue, Joe?
No, not really. I'm not even a huge anime guy, but the lack of English voice acting doesn't really bother me.
Oh, no. It wasn't. No, I don't care about English voice acting. That's not what I care
about. Just the lack of voice acting during conversations?
Yeah, it was just, hold on, I have to blow my nose. Hold on.
Wonderful. Thank you for doing it on the show. Perfect. I'm not editing any of this, by the way. That's going to live on forever in this episode.
What, that blew my nose?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. But the lack of the voice acting in just the standard conversations didn't really bother me, because I read faster than they talk in games anyway.
The thing is, I do too, but it still took me out of it. I mean, like, pretty much every other game I've played, I mean, that's something I would have understood even, like first-gen Xbox, maybe even very early Xbox 360, but it's 2019. Come on. This is a standard thing for just about everybody.
I don't know. It's not a deal breaker for me, but I could see why others.
No, it's not a deal breaker. Trust me. It's not a deal. Like, I'm not like, oh, fuck this game. They don't have in-game conversations. Screw that. I can't even understand Japanese. Like, but damn it, I need it other than during, in-game conversations. Like, it's not that at all. It's just,
I could see why it bothers some people, but it doesn't affect me. So.
Yeah. I'm a weirdo. The other thing that I was having issues with was the combat. I never really felt like it made that much of a difference which stance I was in. And, I felt like after a while, it was just easier just to run up and beat the crap out of everybody, rather than playing out certain moves or invest money in certain skills. It was just like, it gives you two different fighting styles. The difference being, one is not nearly as powerful, but you can move around quicker, and the other one, is easier to kick the shit out of enemies, but you can't really move when you're doing it. And it's just, I really felt like there was no difference between the two, other than, do you feel like moving around a lot or no?
No.
Like, again, not a deal breaker, but it's just, I feel like the combat could have been worked out better. On the other hand, the cruise navigator, holy crap, she is hot.
Like, oh, Jesus.
Like, I was just like, oh, wow, I found my anime bae. Like, she's like, oh, lovey. I was just like, oh, hey.
Hey, what's up, girl? How you doing? Well, minor gripes aside, $60 on this one. What do you think of it?
I will give this a rare buy it. Buy it at full price.
Wow.
I'm totally okay with full price on this one. Yeah, I think this is like, I may have only said that about what, like two or three games here on this show.
Yeah, you're not too crazy with buy it. You usually mainly because of cost as well, because you're a more budget oriented gamer.
I am, but at the same time, it's just like, I feel like the experience needs to also be worth the cost. And honestly, this game, I'm just like, yeah, if I plunked down $60 for this today, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Like, this is a game I could, like, I'm leaving it on my Xbox. I'm going to be returning to it after the reviews are done. So,
well, that is good to hear. I agree. I think the game's a lot of fun. Lots to do, lots to explore. The story is entertaining. It's funny. It's just a really overall solid package. And if I had $60, I would drop it on this one as well.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So,
yeah, it definitely is. It's definitely one of my favorites that I've ever had to review for this show.
Nice. That is good to hear. But you got one other game to talk about. That is called Realms of Arcania Star Trail, developed by Crafty Studios, published by United Independent Entertainment, released February 21st on Xbox One for $39.99. This hardcore RPG features dozens of talents and spells, distinct races and character classes, as well as a challenging, isometric, turn-based combat system. Obey your orders and succeed in your quest to retrieve the Salamander Stone. The peace between elves and dwarves depends on it. Jacob, tell us about this one.
Yeah, so in that description that you just had, like, where they were like, in this hardcore RPG, yeah, they are not lying about this. This is old school, like, 90s PC RPG that, this is not a game that you finish in a weekend. This is not a game that you're going to finish in a week. You're going to be playing this for months. there is a lot of shit to do in this game. There is a lot of places to go, things to explore. And also there's a lot of ways to die before you even like make it past your first town. So I'm going to preface this. I was not a fan of this game. However, I know that there is like a certain subset of RPG fans. Like it's totally up their alley.
This is going to be a love it or hate it kind of experience.
It's not a bad game, but it's not Skyrim. It's not Fable. Like it is like there was a certain period of time in PC gaming where this was a thing. And if you're not a fan of that kind of thing, this could be a hard, like it's going to be a hard pill for you to swallow. And if you're also new to this kind of genre, you are going to do a lot of trial and error and you are going to be dying a lot because this game does not hold your hand. It does not, you know, it like not only does it not hold your hand, but it also doesn't explain itself very well, which is kind of surprising because you have to read a lot, you know, again. Like this isn't like a mid nine. Like I can't, you're going to hear me returning to like, this is a mid 90s thing because I can't stress that enough. Like, again, you know, if you, gosh, I mean like, yeah, we've probably got like an entire like subset of listeners who like were born after this game came out. And so it's just like, they never experienced this kind of stuff. Like it's very much akin to text adventures. Mm-hmm. Where it's just like, it's a lot of reading. You're like, your imagination is going to be making up part of it. And it's just, again, the game, it explains itself, but it doesn't a lot of the times. And so a lot of it ends up being trial and error. Especially like when you're at your first town, because it's like, oh, well, here's how this works. Here's how this works. This is like, all right, here's a person to talk to. Now go figure out stuff. Oh, and like you could get anything if you find out anything interesting, you can write it in a book. And so like the first lady that like you're allowed to talk to, you know, you're supposed to be gathering up information about the town, and the guide tells you, it's just like, well, you know, some people might not want to talk to you right now, but you know, if you return later, you know, they might be in a better mood or they might not. So like, it feels like every single time is going to be a crapshoot. And the first lady that they introduce you to, you get like five questions in before she's like, yeah, I got shit to do, so bye. And then peace. Like the next guy. Yeah. And so you're supposed to like go like wait a day and go find her again. And then like, oh yeah, yeah, sorry, I had chores to do, like whatever. Like the next guy is like, yeah, okay, I've got enough time for one question. What is it? Well, you know, what do you think of, yeah, that's enough, bye. Like, and the thing is that you also have to have, like, the correct character out asking the questions, because, like, some people might have, like, more charisma, or I don't think they actually call it charisma. I forget what they called it. But it's just, like, you know, like, they might have, like, the person that you have out that's doing all the talking, they might have enough charisma for this person, but what if the person doesn't like charisma? And it's just like you could have ended up just screwing yourself over by having like the guy who could talk to everybody. Well, like this townsperson doesn't like those kind of people. And it's like, what? And, I ended up having to read a few guides, up on game FAQs, just to like get an idea of what I was getting into, because like I left the first town and like after my first battle I was like pretty much dead. Like I, like two of my party members were like gone.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah. And they're just like, and the guides are just like, yeah, you can create your own crew if you want to, but first off it's going to take like hours, and also like you're just better going off with what the game gives you, because otherwise like you're not going to, like, you're not necessarily going to know what the game's going to throw at you. And so, like, you could completely throw off all balance, even though you think you have a well-built party, like, two encounters in and you're, like, completely fucked, and then you have to start up a new game. As I said, like, this game is brutal for beginners. to this kind of stuff. And while I played some of these kind of games back when I was 10 and had tons of time on my hands, mainly because I was 10, it's just bizarre, like trying to get into this. So there's that. There's the combat, which, like, I mean, it's fine. It almost feels like turn-based chess, which I know chess is turn-based, but what I mean with that is that it's just like your characters, like, they'll have like a predetermined area that they can move around in, or like, this is what it seemed like to me anyway, a predetermined area that they can move around in. And so, like, if you need them to, like, you could have a guy run five spaces diagonally to go help out, you know, a guy who's getting the shit kicked out of him by goblins, you know, like, you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. And then it's just like, so not only do you have to do that, you also have to, like, run around on this huge world that they've given you. And so not only do you have terrain to deal with, like, mountains and valleys and stuff like that, but you also have to deal with, the weather that comes with it. Like, if you're out in the desert, it's going to be really hot. Everyone needs water. Meanwhile, if you're up in a mountain, you better be packing those sleeping bags, because otherwise everyone's going to get the cold and flu, and, like, they don't have NyQuil in this land. And, like, you, like, it's like Oregon Trail. Like, sorry, your party has died of dysentery. Like, you know, and it's just like, there is a lot to go on in this thing. The graphics are, they're okay. It's early. You know, I know that it's, this got released on Xbox One and PS4. The graphics are, like, they look last gen at best, like early last gen. But the thing is that the people who play, like, who are going to be, like, going nuts over this game, this, like, that's like a whatever, it's a secondary kind of thing. So, yeah. You know, again, this is not Skyrim. Like, you are not looking at, like, beautiful, majestic mountains as far as the eye can see. You are looking, like, part of what sold these games way back in the day is that you had to use your imagination with it. And it's 2019, and frankly, you still are going to need to use your imagination with it.
Which is kind of the charm in games like this.
Kind of. I mean, because just trying to survive, like, how good the graphics are suddenly becomes very secondary to this game, as I try to figure out why how I'm going to survive with, like, half of my party, like, sneezing and coughing and, also not having enough water, so they're dehydrated. And, you know, we're on the run from, you know, orcs or whatever the crap. It just, I wasn't a fan of this game, but the thing is, it's very well put together for what it is. For the kind of game it's supposed to be.
So while it didn't really resonate with you, you can understand the target demographic is going to enjoy it.
Yes, it's like Train Simulator. Like, I absolutely hate Train Simulator, but I totally understand the demographic of, like, who plays Train Simulator and who's willing to drop $24,000 on that game.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen, seen the DLC for that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Gives, like, DOA a run for their money.
You know, only, like, $1,000 more than DOA 6. but it's just like, yeah, there is a very certain demographic that's going to be all over this game. But unfortunately, everyone else is kind of left out in the cold. And if you're not familiar with this, you're going to have to find a different point of entry into these types of games. And unfortunately, like, you're going to have to go digging on, GOG or, Steam for those kind of stuff, because it's just, they don't make those kind of games anymore. And you have to hope that somebody, like, the companies that, you know, made them in yesteryear, they're willing to upload them you know, legally, to those services. So have at it. I wasn't a fan, but again, I know that there are certain people who are going to eat this thing up with a spoon.
Yeah. Well then overall $40, what's your official verdict?
Oof. 40.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah, I'm going to go with a hard no on that. I would have been, again, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what the target demographic is willing to pay for this kind of game. Me personally, I wouldn't have spent more than 20 on it. And even then I wasn't a fan of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, 40, that's a tad surprising to me, but you know,
This is the second one that's available on console, so I'm guessing that the first game did well enough to justify this one. I enjoyed the first one. I might pick this one up as well, just because I enjoy supporting RPGs on Xbox. I do wish it were a little cheaper, but I can definitely, it sounds like the content is there to justify the price.
Yeah, there's tons of content in there. Like, this is a game that, you know, as I said, you're not going to kill it in a weekend. You're not going to kill it in a week. Like, this is going to take, you know, a month, maybe.
This is your life now.
Yeah, exactly.
Realms of Arcania Star Trail is now your life. Enjoy.
We were your life when you are 10. We are your life when you are 40.
Oh, man. Well, Jacob, it is always good having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on to Purnell?
Did you see the new Streets of Rage stuff?
Yeah, I saw the trailer this morning, yeah.
Yeah, buddy. I call dibs on that.
All right, next up, we got Purnell Vaughn joining us. Purnell, how's it going?
I skipped the gym. I'm drinking a Diet Dr. Pepper, and I want to go to bed. How are you?
I feel the same way, although I am drinking an orange vanilla Coca-Cola Zero Sugar.
Those things are crack. And I also got to tell you, I've been taking them to work on just to not use the vending machine. And I kid you not, multiple occasions, someone has seen me with one and goes, "Where'd you get that?" And I'm like, I brought it in from home. Is it the vending machine? I brought it from home. I don't know. But apparently other people either still haven't heard of them yet or they're shocked to see that I have one in my hand. So they must not be easy to come across or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I was at the grocery store today and they didn't have any, but they had Baja Blast. So at least I got one soda I was excited about.
I actually had that on the weekend. We went to Taco Bell for dinner. A midnight Taco Bell run. I haven't done that in forever. Nice. Oh, great. I had 4 tacos, 2 burritos, and one of those rattlesnake fry things. And on one hand, I jokingly said, I can easily recreate rattlesnake fries at home. I don't see what the big deal is. But then realized that even though I could recreate them at home, I wasn't at home. I was in Maryland, and I was hungry. So it was like, well, no better time like now to eat these rattlesnake things. And they were delicious. I like them.
I like the normal nacho fries. I'm not a big fan of their jalapeno sauce.
I just like the jalapenos. Like, I didn't even know what kind of sauce it was. I just figured it was a spicy nacho.
Yeah, it's their spicy jalapeno sauce that they put on goddamn everything.
Mm-hmm.
They even put that on their breakfast burritos and shit like that.
Do you want to shit early? Here you go.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I was ecstatic. I was like, wow, this is really good. It's really hit the spot after a long day. And it's weird because, like, even though I rarely, if ever, go to Taco Bell, I think I put them at the higher end of the fast food joints these days, which is odd to say, I know, but it's true. It all started with that Doritos shell push. It was the kids met in my mouth.
I don't know. We don't get to Taco Bell too much. Taco Bell is like Pizza Hut to us. It's like special occasions only because you have to drive like a half hour to get there.
But you drove there recently yourself, right?
Yeah, I did. I drove to Pizza Hut a couple days ago. The Pizzone is back, which I'm excited about.
Which I admit, I don't think I ever had it. I just know of its existence and know that everybody and their mom used to make jokes about it. Like one of my friends, or not one of them, but a couple of my friends out in the Midwest used to say, "You got Pizzone." Like, Pizzone, which, by the way, there's your episode title, just saying. Pizzone. Yeah, Pizzone. But like, I was very shocked by this. And when you told me it came back, someone else also mentioned that it came back. And of course, the statement was getting passed around. Like, oh man, I get to say you got pizzoned again. And then one person was like, say it again. I never stopped.
Oh God.
But now I got to go out there and get myself some too. I got to figure out what all the fuss is about. It's just a calzone and a pizza, like Pizza Hut calzone, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Although I got to say I'm disappointed. They changed their dough recipe. Instead of the old dough that they used to have, it's like a toasted Parmesan crust. And it doesn't work as well.
At least it's not synthetic dough. It's not real dough, but it's trying to be really hard.
Yeah, some guy online, Michael Payne, told me to ask for regular crust and to add the breadstick seasoning. And he sent a picture, and it looks like the pizzone is supposed to look instead of this new toasted Parmesan look that it's got going on.
I'm just more so surprised he was able to say, can I have the breadstick dough? And they were like, sure.
Or the seasoning, not dough.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, because like, I can't imagine him going, yeah. These are pre-made and we just cook to heat them up, but not for you from scratch.
Here's some raw dough. Enjoy.
We'll make it work. Cause you know, damn, whether or not back there crimping it together. It is a thing they got shipped in a box and they're just throwing it in the oven. Is it delicious? I'm sure it still is, but they're not back there crimping it by hand.
Their breadsticks are the shit though. I love Pizza Hut breadsticks. I could eat those all the time.
Thinking back, man, I still remember Pizza Hut was like the number one place to get pizza. When your mom said, we're going to Pizza Hut, you lost your shit. It was time to go get pizza all up in it. And nowadays, you say Pizza Hut and people don't even want to acknowledge them anymore. They're not the kings anymore. In fact, I don't think there is a pizza king. It's just a bunch of warring armies that just haven't declared a victory yet. Some have fallen off the wayside like Papa John's because they had a freaking like jackbag of a freaking like, you know, corporate head. And then you have Domino's who took an arrow to the knee, but then came back with a new crust. And it goes either way with those two, with that guy, that company. And honestly, there's like just a bunch of like little small hole in the walls, like your local neighborhood pizza joints, which honestly, they're hard to compare because, again, they're local neighborhood pizza joints. You can't be like, oh, yeah, Mario's in Brooklyn is the best pizza joint there is, because how easy is it to compare them? There's too many other middlemen, you know, like small mom and pop pizza joints. You can't compare.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as like the main names go, they're the main ones that I'm recalling right now. And I cannot truly declare a victor. And there's Grotto's, but I think Grotto's is local to me more so like in the Mid-Atlantic. And
we have a Grotto up here as well. So
nice. But people would claim they got the legendary taste as their logo claims. I'm like, not really. You guys are good, but you're not even in the running for top pieces. You can put that down. But then I can't think of anybody. Are there any chains you can think of that I'm forgetting about? Maybe Pizzeria Uno, but I don't really think of them in that same way. I think of them more like a restaurant.
I can't think of any other big CC's, I guess, but they're buffet style. So I feel like we've had this conversation before about pizza chains.
In a parallel universe. The LMS podcast discusses pizza.
The LMS.
Listen, might someone.
And to this day, listen, might someone is still very true.
Oh, there you go. LMS stands for listen, man, seriously. There you go. Parallel universe, SML podcast, the LMS podcast. Listen, man, seriously. It's forceful.
Oh, my God. Oh, we should probably talk about games, huh?
Do we have any pizza games on the roster? Because I'm all for pizza games.
No, there's just two games that you're here to talk about.
That's right. One of them is Pizza Boy, developed by Parmesan Inc., you know, published by Mozzarella Maestros.
That's going to be your video game company, Mozzarella Maestros.
Oh, it needs to see all these ideas. Anybody listening that has, who's, you know, just recently had a large sum of money left to them, looking for a project, Mozzarella Maestros is trying to get the ground running. Get the ground running. I got three game ideas. We can do this thing. Just send me a check.
Well, should we talk about games that are already out and done?
I suppose so, but they ain't touching our game. Mozzarella Maestros for life, baby.
Yeah, that's ours. That'll be our baby.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, first game that you're here to talk about is called Fate Extella Link, developed by Type Moon, published by Xseed Games and Marvelous USA. Released March 19th on Switch, PS4, Vita, and PC for $49.99. Servants from across the Fate series have come together to battle a new sinister threat to Seraph. Fully loaded with new elements, Fate Extella Link includes never-before-seen servants, fresh scenarios, polished gameplay, and refined graphics. New heroes, new stages, new rivals emerge again on the lunar battlefield. Purnell, what is this game?
This is nothing like the Fate I thought I knew. I've only ever seen the Fate, I think it was Fate Unlimited Works anime years ago. It was just, you know, modern day Earth, and they had the Fate Master System, blah, blah, blah. Not this thing, though. Apparently, in Fate Extella Link, the Earth is uninhabitable, and man has taken to the stars to live in a virtual world server-hosted colony called Seraph. And all the humans' minds are hosted by data, or encompassed by data. And for some reason, the system is run amok. And your main character is what's known as a master. A master being a person or a digital mind who is capable of controlling servants, who are digital manifestations of ancient warriors from history with crazy freaking powers. I swear, I think weekly we're going to have to one up each episode and see if I can get a more ridiculous plot with each new game. Because this plot's absurdly ridiculous. But we're not here to talk about the plot, so to speak. If you're interested in these kinds of games, the game is going to be worth it regardless. But what is the gameplay itself like?
That's what I want to know.
And I can honestly tell you, it works. It works well. I was slightly kind of saddened when I learned that it was actually a Musou game. Because you know me and Musou games, they don't quite mesh. And yet, for some reason, I had a lot of fun with this one. I enjoyed it. The way the gameplay works is you go through a story campaign, and in the story campaign, you have the usual tropes, as in a map, each level being a map composed of various nodes connected by pathways. And as a warrior character, you have to decimate enemy armies using a variety of attacks, which I'll get into shortly, to control the sectors and respond to various missions as they pop up on the battlefield. Like, for example, the enemy might send reinforcements out, in which case you need to get to a specific spot on the map to take out those reinforcements before they push forward and encroach on your territory. Your master, who is, I mentioned earlier, the player character in the game, your master is actually a manifestation on the battlefield as well, who doesn't really do anything outside of a specific menu command, which really wouldn't have needed her to be out there, but she is on the battlefield nonetheless, which ultimately results in a potential losing condition if the enemy finds her on the map and beats the tar out of her. So sometimes you might have to retreat back to where your master is housed and defend them when armies are approaching them. So how does battle take place? Well, again, like I mentioned earlier, you can control one of these numerous servants that you can unlock in the game. And when you get a servant, they have a light attack and a heavy attack, which can be, you know, button combination can be mixed back and forth to get a certain chain of attacks going, specific moves, which is kind of nice. If you hold down one of the trigger buttons, your face buttons will associate with a variety of special attacks that you can unleash. Whether you start with some, and as you level up your master, your servant, you'll get more that the character can have, and you can pretty much use those at will, each with a certain cooldown time, and when the cooldown runs up, you can use it again. Once you've run through enough combos, you can go into a sort of overdrive mode, and this overdrive mode is like a mode where your attack power and your defense power gets boosted. And if you're fighting and killing dudes while in that mode, you increase an EX gauge. And once that gauge is maxed out, you can do a super sector clearing attack move that is visually stunning. Though, of course, like in most games like this, after two or three of them, you'll just want to skip it because you're in it for the damage, not the visuals you've seen already. Doesn't mean they're not good to look at, though. Just, you know, you see them enough. And honestly, this gameplay loop is fun. It's enjoyable. As you go through levels and you eventually beat the main leader on each stage, because normally the enemies can be like attack programs, which are just weird, like digital clones, a.k.a. the fodder of the game that doesn't really do anything to you. Then they're called clone servants, which is basically digital manifestations. Redigital, or weaker digital manifestations of the real servants. So, whereas Charlemagne, who is the first servant you pretty much get to use in the game, is a saber with detail and color and a voice, the basically the clone servant is just like a sort of like starry looking image, like body clone that just runs around. He doesn't have any real details or definition. Basically, he's just out there to be killed. He's stronger than an aggressor or stronger than the fodder, but still not too strong to be taken out. And then there are like the main servant monsters, which are pretty much the actual characters in the game, because which I find kind of funny is the way that they decided to make it such you had to fight characters that you know in the series is by making it so that the main adversary is able to, they call them like, or oracleize them, which is to control their drive or their desire, what they want to accomplish, but their personalities and thoughts remain completely intact, which means you get the exact same character who just wants to kill you for some reason. It's nice. Pretty convenient and funny. It works, right? Gets the job done. But that's pretty much how the game will play. You'll go through a story mission, you'll beat it, then there'll be a sequence that occurs afterwards, and you might get a choice which will say, hey, like, for example, do you want to rush the main enemy line, or do you want to take a detour and attack them from the back, blah, blah, blah. And depending on which one of those decisions you choose will determine the next level within the story you have access to. Now, with that said, that does not mean you are locked into a route in the game, because before each level, you can choose where you want to go, and you can access any level you've already unlocked. So if you choose one route, but then decide you want to see what the other route looks like, you can just go back, pick the other stage, do it, which will then fulfill the condition required to go to the level after it, and you can just do it too. So you're not story locked in any way. You can go back, take care of business as needed, and just have fun.
That is good to hear. I hate when games lock you out of content based on decisions that you make. I can understand the reason for doing it, but sometimes I just want to see everything a game has to offer without needing a dozen playthroughs.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly, because, well, I agree. Like, I get the whole need to have a story, but just give me a toggle to say, you want to go back to this story note and check it out? Like, yes, because I value my freaking time. I'm not doing three playthroughs. Screw that. So, thankfully, this game does it the right way. You don't have to worry about that nonsense. Now, as far as the characters themselves go, leveling them up is simply a matter of just going out into the battlefield, kicking the tar out of monsters, beating the stage, and leveling up. You will also, during the stage, acquire, I guess, like, essence nodes. I can't remember what the heck they even called, but they're basically the equivalent of ability nodes. And when you finish the level, you can equip these ability nodes on your character to give them various passive buffs, such as, like, attack plus 10%, or additional gold or experience drops on the battlefield, so on and so forth. As you level up the character, of course, you'll get access to more places you can put them so you can equip more at a time. In addition, like I said earlier, you get different attacks that you can equip. And in order to prevent yourself from needing to grind too much, you are allowed to spend the money that you earned in combat to level up characters. So you can level them up until they're as high as your highest level character. So theoretically, you could just play through the game with one guy and then just go back and pay money to level up the other guys as you see fit. Though, of course, you'd be crazy to do that, because why not experience those characters while you level them up and get to see how they play? But it's just a way to get a guy from, like, say, level 5 to level 20 without having to grind him like you did the first guy. It's much easier just to pay for it. And I love how they say, they call it the money is power system. It's kismet. It's beautiful. Also, I got to mention, there's like also like a sort of link system and a bond system. The way links work is that while you're on the battlefield, if you have a support character on the field with you, usually it's just like story-based where it'll just be a character that's on your team that's out there fighting alongside you or in a certain area. If they're near you and you enter like a sort of like large attack combo string, think sort of like, you know, where it was the games where you kind of mash X to like win against a tug of war or a battle power attrition. If they're with you, it becomes easier to win those, and they actually kind of support you with like combo attacks and stuff.
Mm.
There's also a bond system where it's basically more like a submission system where when you go on a level, the game will present you with a list of like subquests, like take over 5 sectors or get a 200 combo or something crazy like that. And each of those submissions will be attributed to one of your servants. God, it's so funny. Master Servant, which I'll tell you about that in a second. But you choose the missions you want, and each of those are attributed to one of the servants. And if you can fulfill that mission objective, you'll increase the bond with your character as well. And as the bonds of the characters go up, when you equip them as sub-support troops, which you can also do before a level, they will come with different skills that you can get as well. So you can say, like, I say, can't even hard to think of, like, just say, like, a, let's just say, for example, like a random, like, survive one fatal blow or something like that can be earned if you have the right, you know, servant up to a decent enough bond level. You can survive one fatal blow, something like that. So it incentivizes you to play with as many servants as possible and to pretty much do all their sub quests and equip them with various skills and all. Just, it gives you lots of excuses to run around beating the crap out of enemies mercilessly without a care in the world, because you are way too strong for this world. it's a power fantasy in a good way. It's not a bad thing. But I don't know what it is. I mean, for the sake of me playing this game, though, I did feel as though I was enjoying mowing down enemies. It felt good to just kind of run through and knock guys out, because on one hand, I do generally hate, you know, having no real sense of challenge there. Though you can have challenge if you want to go against a level 10 mission with a level 1 guy. You will probably die. Or you just won't be able to succeed long enough because you're too weak to deal with any of the conditions that are based around time. But I enjoy doing that. And it's interesting because due to them hitting you with so many like sub goals, like, hey, go defend this sector or save this guy or whatever, or kill the messenger before he sends out for reinforcements, you are constantly on the move doing something. You can't just stay in a sector and beat guys ad nauseum. You have to respond to the issues that are happening on the battlefield. So you're constantly on the move. And I think that did a great job of keeping me from feeling like I was just getting, getting tired of just mashing X to beat random guys ad nauseum. And I love how I said X because the jump button, not the attack button, but whatever, I digress. The game works. I mean, I found it enjoyable. And I also forgot to mention, you also unlock extra missions too. So as you play through the game, you'll also unlock additional missions you can play outside of the story mode that are typically harder than the main game and more varied in objectives. But the side benefit is that they give you more money and more experience than the normal game does. So it's easier to level up your guys and get more money to pay to level your guys up. The game surprisingly works. I will say that it is a sequel to another game, and I will also say that due to that, there may be a few story elements that may not ring so clear to you initially, but the trade-off is that this is all new to you as a game. So I think personally, if I had to choose, I am happier having not played the first game, which is a rare thing in my case, than if I played the first game and then came back for this one.
And why is that?
Because it's a Musou game. Like, it's I feel like this game, you get more content for the style of gameplay that you get, but you don't need to feel like you're retreading old ground, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
It's like all of it's new, but there's more of it.
Which is always good. Having more content is never a bad thing in games.
Agreed. Which I always found funny. You ever hear people say, like, there's too much in this game, it gets boring? You ever heard anyone say that? I'm like, look, I'm not going to complain. If the game has more than I've got time for, then that means I got my money's worth. I got tired of it having spent, I spent 75 hours playing this game and now I'm bored. This is stupid. Who says that?
Well, I play something else. Jesus.
Exactly. I spent 75 hours on a game that goes for 100. Even if I stopped at 75 and said, I'm moving to something else, they had to have been 75 quality hours. Otherwise, why did I do that to myself?
Yeah. You got your money's worth.
Exactly. So I think this game has tons of content. I'm not sure how many people are going to get through all of it, as in, you know, leveling up every servant and maxing out all the bonds, da da da. But it will definitely keep you busy until you get tired of it, or until you feel as though you've defied all logic and actually accomplished 100%.
Well, then $50 on it. What do you say?
I would honestly give this a buy. It is a genuinely fun game. You know what you're getting into by either knowing the genre or hearing me talk about it, which is a power fantasy and a half, but it is a fun power fantasy that gives you lots to do.
Nice.
Ice. Seraphs.
I might have to give this one a go myself. I've always been into the Dynasty Warrior style games of just hack slash and beat things up, so I might have to give this one a go.
I can definitely tell you that I prefer this to the Dynasty Warrior games I've attempted to play.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, for sure. So it's kind of funny, too, because if I'm not mistaken, this wasn't developed by Tecmo Koei.
Nope. Of course,
you didn't say it earlier, so there you go. So
glad you paid attention, Pernell.
Of course I did. I'm lazy, not a jerk.
debatable.
Come on. I drank the orange vanilla Coke, didn't I?
Yes, you did. You can't be a jerk if you drank that.
Damn straight I can't. It's delicious. Well,
it is delicious. And mine's empty, so I don't know what to do now. I'm drinking water. It's just... It's like drinking water after drinking something delicious. That's what it's like.
Use your mind's eye to imagine the flavor.
And the problem is I have a can of strawberry guava Diet Coke sitting on my desk, but it's so noisy to open that up.
That's good, because on the positive, it means that it's an excuse to drink more water, because I'm sure you and I could both stand to drink more water.
Probably.
The soda will still be.
Yeah, it'll be there later. Anyway, you got one other game to talk about. That is called Nova Drift, developed by Chimeric, published by Pixel Jam, released March 27th on Steam for $14.99. Nova Drift distills the mechanical depth of an action RPG into classic arcade space combat. Control an endlessly evolving biomechanical ship, face legions of strange and deadly foes, and ride the wake of a dying star across the void. You previewed this one a couple of weeks ago. Now you're giving it the full review. What do you think of it, Purnell?
I gotta say, my opinion hasn't changed a bit. The game is really good, and it definitely still deserves a buy it beyond a try it. But why is that? Simple. The gameplay is bloody addictive, and it works. So, the idea is that you are a ship on a screen that does not scroll. It does not move. It is one screen, only one screen. Sounds stupid. It is not. Because the way it actually plays is that it's one of those games where you go out one side and you show up on another, like how combat on the Atari used to work. Go off the right side, come in on the left. Go off the
like
top,
Asteroids.
I guess Asteroids did that too. Yeah, you're right. That's actually a better comparison than combat. And as that stands, the enemies function in a similar manner as well. They'll come in from the sides of the screen. There'll be other, whether it be opposing ships or asteroids. How did I not think asteroids when there are actual asteroids in the game?
Come anyway, on, girl. Get your shit together.
It's this damn Dr. Pepper. It should be an orange vanilla Coke. I'd feel better if that were the case. But as far as the game goes, ships and asteroids are coming in from the sides, and when they show up, you need to destroy them. Your ship can move forward by hitting a thrust button, and you can shoot by hitting a gun button, like a fire button. As you kill enemies, they will drop various cores, like these little energy white cores. You'll barely notice they're there because you'll be too busy picking them up while dodging bright shrapnel. But as you get the stuff, you will occasionally level up your ship. And when you do so, you can press the button to go into a menu that will randomly generate a series of upgrades that you can equip, or not equip, but just unlock for your ship. It could be upgrades that will increase firepower, various stats like your shield hull resistance, your hit point total, your trajectory for shots, the size of your bullets, the way they explode. It gets a little ridiculous, but that's not a bad thing. In addition to those things, you get different guns as a whole. Like you might get like a rail gun. I love the rail gun. There was one gun that looked like Medusa's hair shooting out the nose of your ship. I love that a lot. And you also can get different hulls for the ship as a whole. So it could be like a ship hull that will allow you to go into stealth mode when you're not firing bullets, or it might be one that's designed to let you, you know, dash into enemies and break them. All kinds of cool upgrades. And as you get an upgrade, it will also lead into a skill tree that as you get the different upgrades on it, you'll eventually unlock the top tier of that tree. It's, I guess they're kind of related in their tree form, but some of them feel like they're a little different. Like you might want level one and level two, but then see level three and go, I'm not really interested in that. It throws off my game plan. Which isn't a bad thing. I mean, it's actually kind of cool. It just means that you might have saw something else through your upgrading line that's like, you know, I'd rather have this upgrade than this. And I feel like they might kind of cancel each other out or whatever. But you'll pretty much be doing this, exactly this, throughout the entire game. As every couple of waves or so, you'll unlock a boss fight that'll show up and you got to kick the living tar out of him using your hopefully competent ship that you've built up over your various leveling ups. If you get to a level up screen and you feel as though you don't like any of the stuff that's available, you can earn rerolls, which will allow you to reroll the options and try the, and hopefully get something better to unlock. You are able to see all the unlocks you've acquired as you play through a round on the left-hand side of the screen while you're in the upgrades menu. Though the only downside, which I wonder if there's a way to do this that I didn't realize, kind of like how I didn't realize you could reverse in the previous time, is that I would like if you were, if it was like a way to say, like via text, like this is the upgrades you've got. You've got this one, this one, this one, this one, this one, instead of just the icons themselves. Because I don't know what those icons mean half the time. They look cool when you're buying the upgrade, but when it's just the icon to represent your upgrade, I'm too dense to know the difference. Every time you complete a session, you will get like a sort of overall game experience increase. And for every level you get there, you'll unlock either new mods for your ship, new skill tree unlocks for like upgrades for your ship in future playthroughs. You can unlock different types of playthroughs. Like you might unlock different modes, such as like one where the enemies just kind of come harder and faster, on endless mode, things like that. And it's just lots of unlocks. There's lots of things that keep you coming back to get more goods, more gear, and just expand on your playthrough. And the game itself is just fun. I honestly enjoyed coming back multiple times just to see how well I would do. This isn't the kind of game you're going to come back to say, man, I wonder how the story ends or whatever, because there is no freaking story. You're a ship blowing up other ships, whatever. But you don't need that sometimes. Sometimes you just want a good arcadey gameplay with an experience and leveling up twist, and this game delivers on that. And I didn't even mention, you can, in addition to the other things I mentioned unlocking, sometimes you can also get like drone ships that fire with you. You can drop mines as you unlock the mines. There's a lot of stuff going on in this game. It's a good game too.
Cool. Then $15 on it. What do you think?
Oh yeah, this is a total buy it. I wish it was on the Switch, to be honest with you.
Well, maybe consoles will come eventually. I think we mentioned that on the previous one. And I can't remember if the guy said it was on the table or not, but who knows? It might happen.
It does. I'll gladly recommend it again, because this is perfect for like playing on the cane. Well, maybe not on the cane. Your legs will, because sessions aren't short, but they're not long, but they're also not toilet short.
You'll just have sore legs when you're done. It's good.
That sounds about right. Yeah, you will have sleepy legs. Bam.
You'll have that red ring on your ass from sitting too long.
Looks like you come out with a case of Nova Drift.
Yeah, a case of Nova Drift.
Will I ever walk again, Doctor? Oh, no, no, no. Here's your switchback.
Purnell, it is always good having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
At the moment, nope. Just keep playing them games. Keep listening to that game music and don't be a dick.
All right, and finally, we've got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going all right. Just hanging out.
Just hanging out? That all you're doing?
Hanging out with my family, having ourselves a party.
If you haven't Skyrim.
You caught me. Yes, that is true. But no, actually, not as of yesterday, because I finally got I ordered it from East Asia Soft, or Play Asia, whichever one you want to say. I got the boxed limited edition of Reverie on the Switch.
Ooh.
Which y'all might remember is a game I reviewed on the PlayStation 4. I liked it so much that I was like, well, hell yeah, I'll buy it on the Switch and in a deluxe edition. And yeah, it's definitely deluxe. Got a full soundtrack and everything.
I was going to ask, what kind of goodies come with it?
20 disc soundtrack. 20 discs.
20 discs. 20 shit.
20 tracks.
20 discs.
Yeah, it's 20 tracks, which is probably close to all of them. I always appreciate that when they do a full soundtrack rather than just a sampler, like, you know, talking to you, Etrian Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
But it also came with a map, which is nice. I'm going to unfold that and possibly put it in a frame or something, because, you know, the game takes place in New Zealand, or an island off of New Zealand, so it's kind of cool that it's, you know, at least based on a fictional place that exists outside of it. But, and it actually came with an official yo-yo.
Really? So, a yo-yo?
Yeah, an official Reverie yo-yo.
Interesting. I've never seen a collector edition come with a yo-yo.
Right? And, I mean, yeah, I think yo-yos factor into the game, so, because it is very Earthbound-like, so. And then it came with, of course, a sticker, and one last thing. Oh, a numbered certificate. So, for those of you keeping count, I got number 961 out of 3,000.
Nice.
Yeah. Wait, was it 961? Now I don't. No. A shadow of doubt has been cast over this number. I probably got that wrong, but I was within 1,000 of the 3,000 that they ever made, and those are now gone, so good luck to those of you. Yeah, I'm sure half of them are on eBay right now.
Probably.
I mean, it was a $35 limited edition physical release of a digital only game, so.
With a yo-yo.
Yeah. Yeah, with a yo-yo. I haven't played with the yo-yo yet, but it came with a spare string, which I think it was very generous of them.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm very happy about that. I started up another game last night and got through the tutorial dungeon, and, you know, it's just as fun as ever. And they did add some things to the Sweet As edition. They made the sprites a little different. Like, they added, I think, some shading or something like that. Made it more Mother 3-ish than Earthbound-ish. Like, that much of an... Not that dramatic of an upgrade, but I could tell that it looked a little better all around, so that was nice. But anybody who's listening to this, I reiterate, you know, now that it's on Switch, go check that game out. Because I had three different friends who, when they saw my box edition, they were like, oh, I've never even heard of this game. I was like, well, I reviewed it. I talked about it. I talked about ordering it. And they were like, oh, I just went and bought it. So, you're welcome, Rainbright. Rainbite, sorry. I keep thinking it's Rainbright. But I think it's Rainbite.
You're just thinking of Rainbow Bright.
Yes, actually, I am thinking of that, because that was a weird-ass movie that they had back in the day. Like, the one that has, like, this dystopian, like, thing with this robot horse called Onyx.
Oh my god, memory lane.
Y'all look it up and tell me I'm wrong. I still remember the song at the beginning of that film, and I haven't watched it since I was 8 years old.
Oh my lord.
Yeah. Let's get away from that, though.
Yeah, let's get away from our 80s childhoods. And you got two games to talk about tonight. You ready for these?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First game is called Peasant Knight, developed by 4AM Games, published by Rattlelake Games. Released March 19th on the PS4 and Vita for $2.99. Peasant Knight is a challenging puzzle platformer that you can only play with, only two keys, jump and stop. All the while you're relentlessly dashing forward into traps, enemies, and hazards, Peasant Knight has a tongue-in-cheek tone that fits well with the many ways to reach your demise. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right, so I was just about to say Puzzle Knight. Damn it. Peasant Knight. it's pretty much the description more or less says everything that you need to know about the game, but we'll I got it, so let's talk about it. Yeah, it is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's, you know, a letter. He writes a letter to his mom, and that's the intro to the game, and talks about how he dropped his sword because you don't actually fight in the game. So it's kind of funny that he's like, oh, I dropped my sword. But yeah, anyways. So it is a game where it is an auto-runner, I think is what they call them. Yeah. What is that, the industry term?
I guess that's what I call them.
Yeah, so when the level starts, you basically hit the ground running perpetually forward. And the first thing, so there's 80 levels in the game, at least that they advertise. I don't know if they have any further levels than the 80. But for the first couple of them, all you're learning how to do is stopping. And despite the fact that they had the full controller to work with, they decided to make only one button for each function. So stopping is pushing left on the D-pad. I don't even think the stick works. And so you're running forward and you have to stop before something hits you. And, you know, the case of the first couple of levels, it's a pillar of fire that, you know, is on a timer. And that timer is such to where you will run into it if you just run. So you have to stop before it. And the trick to that in this game is that even though you can put on the brakes in midair, you can put on the brakes literally, I think, any time that you're moving, you still have a little bit of a stop. There's a little bit of a slowdown to stop. It's mm-hmm. not just stopping on a dime. So you have to be able to tell, you know, you kind of have to have understand that the game has a delayed reaction kind of thing. So stopping actually becomes quite challenging, and the way the game throws things at you, that's going to be much to your detriment if you don't figure it out early on.
Oh yeah.
After several levels, they will introduce the second function, which is jump. That will get you through platforms. Especially one that they really like to do is where you'll be jumping, and then there will be a platform that once you land on it, it will start to go up. But if you didn't land in the right place, then you will get squished by the floor or by the ceiling, you know, as the platform goes up. And the, this game is a, is very much, a trial of attrition. That is to say, you are going to die many, many, many thousands of times before you get it right.
Oh yeah.
And, the game really doesn't offer you much in the way of like instruction. They're just like, you can figure this out. And, yeah, about the time they started introducing tiny platforms where you have to stop perfectly and then jump perfectly and then also run the timers about the part where my skill level hit the ceiling and I wasn't able to get much further than that. The other thing about it is that you can't get through the stages carefully, because of elements related to the plot, which again is just a brief summary at the very beginning of the game. If you are in a level for too long, there's actually a bar at the top of the screen that's your timer bar. When that hits, when that hits the end, then you get struck by lightning and killed. So, you could be inches away from that finish line and, you'll get struck by lightning and killed. So the game not only forces you to be really good at a very limited set of mechanics, it also forces you into a kind of speedrun mentality. So you have to be able to, you're like, I can't stop on every platform because I will run out of time. So I have to be able to use momentum and actually get through all of this. And, adding to that, it has some pretty good music. I would say it's like 16-bit Madrigal style tunes. And what I like is that they play persistently, even while you're dying a thousand times. So it doesn't actually start the soundtrack over, which in a game like this, I always give that extra points.
Yeah, that would be maddening if it was just the same 4 seconds of music over and over.
I've played games like that, though. So kudos to these guys for figuring out that, yeah, we just want the soundtrack to just keep going. Or, maybe we'll just listen to something else. Doesn't really matter. So, yeah, this is a pretty good little, pick up and play. Didn't really require anything in the way of a tutorial. The game kind of just naturally teaches you through a pretty steep difficulty curve how to do things and, just see how far you can get, see if you can get through all 80 levels and save the day, ?
And best of all, it's only $3.
Yeah, I was going to wrap that into my summary, but...
Well, then give us your summary. $3, what do you say?
Well, look, $3, I mean, it's hard not to recommend. So I do say that this is a well-made game. It's got plenty of content and, just take a cursory look at it. I mean, if it looks like something that might interest you in the least, I say it's solid and it's made well and definitely worth $3. So, yeah.
And it's $3.
Yeah, exactly. I actually would like to see 4AM Games do a more full-fledged platformer, actually, because I'm kind of interested in their ideas. So,
yeah, that'd be cool to see. And I mentioned it's on PS4 and Vita for $3. It is also on the Switch for $3.
Yes, that is correct. I
forgot to mention that.
Yeah, I saw it in the store on the Switch, too. And, yeah, it's there. I think it's actually a little more. I don't know if it's... Yeah, I don't remember if it's exact... It's like maybe a dollar more. I don't know.
$2.99. It's actually on sale for $2.39. I don't know how long that sale lasts, so there's a chance that might be over by the time you hear this. But yep, $2.99 on the Switch.
Yeah, get out there and save your 60 cents, folks.
Do it.
You can buy 1/4 of a soda.
Oh, man. Final game to talk about tonight is called Symmetry, developed by Sleepless Clinic, published by Imagine... Imagine... I don't know if they're imagination.pro or just imagine.pro. IMGN.pro. I always forget.
IMGN. Imgin.
Imgin.pro.
Imgin.pro. Imgin.pro.
Imgin.pro. Released March 19th on the Switch for $9.99. A research spaceship reaches an abandoned planet. Nothing is what it seems here, and the situation quickly slips out of control. Can the crew manage to survive and get back home? Chris, did you get back home?
Oh, God, no. that's a definite no from me on this one. Okay, so Symmetry is a real-time survival sim in sub-zero temperatures in outer space, a considerable distance away from anybody that will ever see or help you. your crew, there's actually a screenshot that I took on the Switch that I really like because it's part of the story, but it says crew status, Jacob, Anna, Desmond, alive, rest of the crew, status unknown. Ooh. And, but you see the three characters that you get to play in the game as in the foreground, but in the background you see five other characters that are just covered in blood. It's like status unknown. I was like, I think I could take a wild guess. Anyway, I just really like that. So yeah, you play as Jacob, Anna, and Desmond, which, you know, when you're having to, you know, sort of put your life in the hands of a guy called Desmond, you know you're in trouble. Yeah, so you basically start off, there's only like one sort of field of play, basically like a large, you know, just a bit of an expanse of one screen. And the thing is that you basically, the name of the game is getting your characters to survive and kind of set up a system where they can survive long enough to be able to gather the materials and put the time into repairing each and every part of their ship so that they can put the whole ship back together and get out of there, or radio for help. There's a couple of different things. And yeah, the clock is ticking on this game. So, you really, like, the first time I played it, I was like, okay, well, I need to fix this thing. It's going to require these materials. All right, Desmond, you go find those materials, and, it's going to require, you know, oh, I'll put this one guy on, I don't know, you know, I'll have him learn how to gather more of these materials. So let's speed this up a little bit. And I'll have this other person learn, some stuff. And yeah, very quickly everybody died. So you can't just jump in and try and fix the machinery. You actually have to work on not only keeping your people like fed and rested. They rest in a kind of, it's like this treadmill with a scanner kind of thing. It's very silly. I mean, nothing in this game is silly. It just kind of like you know, it's quasi-futuristic, so I guess maybe part of it's like a little bit satirical. But so the first thing that you actually have to do in order to survive this game is to, you start off with the enough materials to fix the food, like, refrigeration unit, which will, that's where you store your food. And you can have one person work on actually making the food, which looks like they just kind of program stuff into a computer, and then that puts food in the fridge. I guess I can't really tell, but you know, anything that you do, it's a real time strategy. So anything is like, you know, they'll have a little status bar that shows what they're doing. And then, you know, as they gather resources, it starts to look a little bit familiar, like a Warcraft type thing. But then you realize, oh, as I'm, storing all this food, you know, with this thing repaired to like level one, it's not actually holding the food for very long, and I actually have to fix this thing even more and gather more materials. And oh, everyone's starving now.
Oh, God.
So then you're like, okay, you know, you start again, and you know, it's all about like figuring out what to do to like kind of get these people to not die within like a day. Because they're just constantly getting hungry and they need rest. And, you know, you can kind of stave off the hunger a little bit by having them rest. But ultimately, like, it's just about like all this kind of resource management type stuff on such a scale that like it really becomes difficult. You know, it's basically kind of like one false move and suddenly somebody's on the floor and you only have three people. I don't think that there's any point in the game where another person comes by, but I mean, I didn't survive long enough to really tell. So I think you are just stuck with the three people. Interestingly, if one of your people dies, you get an interesting option to either bury the person or eat them. And you can actually fill up your refrigerator, and it, like, you know, if you do that, then the fridge becomes like covered in blood and stuff, and it's like, oh my God. And yeah, it's pretty interesting, and it does fill up the fridge for like one, you know, for like 20 units, which if your folks don't eat them, then those units disappear and then they die too. So like the other game, actually, there's a lot of death involved in trying to learn the ropes in this game. But yeah, eventually, you know, once you're able to like get them into a system where they're able to survive and, like, you know, get into a rest and eating cycle and gathering up enough materials to, like, repair your stuff so you can better eat and rest. And actually, you need to heat up the ship too, which involves, like, gathering timber. And, you know, there's only three things that you really have to do as far as work goes, and that's food, timber, and what they call electro waste, which is the power units that you need to repair stuff, including stuff on your little ship, and also, you know, the parts to get you out of there eventually. And so the thing also runs on a day and night cycle. So if you try to go out at night, it becomes dangerously cold. And so you kind of have to more work indoors. And, you know, if you didn't gather enough timber at the daytime, then that becomes perilous. Basically everything is perilous. And eventually, like, weather events start happening that makes things even worse, like earthquakes and such. And so
everything is trying to kill you.
Everything is trying to kill you, and time is usually the one that ends up winning. And, yeah, it's just all about, like, it's very, very bleak. Cause you don't get to really explore. You know, if you tell the person to gather timber, they go out the left side of the ship. If you tell them to get electro waste, they go out to the right side of the ship. All the ship parts are out to the left of the ship. You know, food is just programmed in, unless one of the crew members is food. And so, yeah, it's just like, there, as far as I could tell, there's not even a soundtrack in this game. It's just ambient, you know, outside weather noise. So it's very much like one of those kind of airplane crash movies where you're just like, it's just 2 hours of, like, you know, sort of
survival
torture
and death.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we, you know, we had to eat each other to survive. And like in that film, we had to eat each other to survive.
Yeah, on the bright side, it's a great looking game. I love the visuals of it.
Yes, it is a very good looking game. The characters are kind of like hand drawn looking. You know, they, and the other thing is that if you do keep them alive, then the whole thing is like, while you're going about the business, sometimes, you know, there's dialogue that will appear at the top of the screen where they discuss the situation and kind of like the events leading up to the situation. So there actually is a story in this game too, and it's fascinating. It's very cool for, like, you know, people who enjoy that kind of sci-fi realism, because it's like, you know, let's do something unrealistic but make it extremely realistic.
Yeah.
So I do think that's kind of cool. So yeah, props on the graphics. Could have used some music, at least a sad cello or something.
A sad cello.
It plays a drama chord if somebody drops dead. If somebody drops dead, that's about all I could tell.
Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
Well, this one's definitely a niche title. It would have its audience in people who enjoy resource management, sims, and, of course, like I said, the sort of dark sci-fi nature of the whole thing. For most people, this game is going to be pretty bleak and extremely difficult. You know, I was able to hang with it, and that's the one thing, is that there's barely a tutorial in it. Like, it kind of starts to tell you how to do certain things, but by that time, you're already dying. So I'm kind of like, man. And there's two difficulty modes where one difficulty is called survival and the other difficulty is called try harder.
Oh, God.
And I don't understand what that means. I just assume that survival is the easier mode because it's higher on the list. It's the one that's selected by default, so I assume that's the normal one. And then there's a grayed out survival mode that's in the front screen that I guess you unlock if you complete the game. I'm not exactly sure what that means either. Maybe it's a, you know, just surviving with no end game in sight, which I'm like, man. So this is for sure for fans of the kind of, like, bleak desperateness that this game really does a good job in putting out there. So for those people, I definitely recommend this, and it's good quality for $10. You know, there doesn't seem to be any really exploration element or anything like that to it. So, I mean, don't expect to be, like, you know, dropping in on futuristic cities or, you know, solving quests or anything like that. It's basically just get your scientists to live long enough to fix their shit and get out of there.
Yeah.
And a worthy cause, I think. I mean, I liked it, so I would say it's, but I would say for most people it is a try it. But for people who like resource sims and who like difficulty, this is a definite buy it. Like, this game was made for you, so
Would you call it the Dark Souls of survival simulation?
I don't know, because you can win Dark Souls. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, let's call it that. Let's call it the Dark Souls of quasi-futuristic survival cannibal simulations.
Sounds good. Oh, yeah. Man. Chris, thanks as always for coming on and chatting about all the games. That is it for this episode. Thanks again to Purnell and Jacob for coming on and doing their stuff as well. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
My roommate just informed me that there's a new Motley Crue movie on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah. So, I don't know. Go watch that.